So I want to continue my thoughts on topic of these 2 weeks, wholesome and unwholesomeness, skillfulness and unskillfulness. And this week I wanted to continue a little bit more focus on the unwholesome. Next week more the wholesome. So begin with a story. So when I was 27, I was ordained as a Zen monk, Zen priest, and you know, it was a big turning point in my life to enter into the religious life and as a calling, as a something was going to be my life. And one of the surprises to me from doing the ceremony, the ordination ceremony, was that afterwards, you know, I had a shaved head, I wore robes, and I was now a much more of a public figure, or someone who people could see that I was publicly demonstrating, or could see in how I shaved my head and the clothes I wore, that I was dedicated to this religious life, this Dharma life. So I felt much more accountable to people. I felt much more acutely sensitive to other people's, you know, studying me and seeing how I behave and all that. So I think as a consequence of this, I became much more acutely aware of my own shortcomings. And I had lots of them, but I became much more acutely sensitive to them. But at the same time, and this was the remarkable thing, is that because I had been ordained, I felt kind of metaphorically or figuratively or something that I was now a child of the Buddha. And so it was more okay to have the shortcomings. I was accepted, in a sense, with them. And this combination, I thought, was really precious, that I became more aware of my shortcomings and it was more okay to have them in a certain way. It didn't mean that I indulged in them and now I had free rein to kind of act them out or just continue merrily going along with my shortcomings. I had a practice and to look at it and to work with it and to find freedom from it, with it. But this combination of heightened sensitivity to one's own shortcomings as a good thing, as a helpful thing, at the very same time, not to be troubled by it, not be defined by it, not feel somehow belittled by it or ashamed of it or anything. This is the way forward in the Dharma. And one of the we keep saying, there are many Vipassana teachers, when we give talks about the hindrances are five: unwholesome states of mind and unwholesome forms of behavior and thinking. When we get caught in greed, we get caught in ill will, and get caught in sloth and torpor, or restlessness and regrets, and caught in doubt. Vipassana teachers will often say, don't take them personally. Don't define yourself by them. Don't judge yourself by their presence. It's completely natural for human mind to produce hindrances. You know, we have millions of years of evolution behind us that has shaped us in the way we are, and we can't undo that in some automatic way. You didn't choose, you know, how many arms and hands you were born with. You're sitting there kind of as an embryo forming your body parts and say, "In this time, I think I want four arms or six arms, you know, and I can be much more efficient and do more things, and that would be a good idea." We're kind of, our genetics, you know, operates in a certain way, before we're consciously aware and can make choices, so much of who we are has been shaped. And by the continuum of the evolution, of genetics, of this kind of natural unfolding of our lives that's part of the natural world. And with that comes the tendencies to behave in certain unskillful ways, unwholesome ways, unbeneficial ways. But to see this as part of nature, as opposed to see it as somehow a sin or a great moral crime that we should behave this way. And so to have a willingness to see clearly, to acknowledge, to recognize our shortcomings. If we think even the word shortcomings is a little bit judgmental, maybe you could say your foibles. Or maybe just say to recognize our unwholesome states of mind, unwholesomeness, to recognize, or if even that seems a little judgmental, you could use the translation of kusala as unskillful. Well, that's unskillful. And unskillful, can be much more simple, straightforward, like, oh, that wasn't useful, that's not beneficial, that's not a good skill to do. But somehow or other, this combination of being willing to acknowledge we have shortcomings, sometimes be amused, sometimes maybe be a little bit sad that they're there, and because it's a way of causing harm to self and others, but not to carry the weight of them, and not allow yourself to be defined in some negative way, so that they add more suffering on top of suffering on top of suffering. So just to see it as natural, and then work with it, and be wise about it, and be very careful not to cause harm with it. There's a wonderful list of unwholesome states in the suttas and the teachings of the Buddha. And in this particular teaching, seeing the presence of these, so really acknowledging them, and then seeing when they're no longer there, when they're somehow definitively, clearly absent, shows us the movement and the potential of what we're looking for here in the Dharma. We're not looking just to simply accept our foibles. We're actually looking in the Dharma to live without them, to be free. And this is a radical teaching that some people feel is, unattainable or unrealistic. But it's phenomenal how much we could redo the software of our minds, and so that certain tendencies, habits that we have, can fall away. It takes practice. It takes dedication. It's not going to happen from wishful thinking. But to see the presence of these unskillful states, and then to really experience the absence of them, say, wow, this is a possibility. And to be inspired by that. And this is what inspires me to practice. This possibility of freedom, of fresh air, of open space, of clarity, of freedom. This is possible. And now that I have a taste, this is what to practice with. So this wonderful list, I think it's a wonderful list of unwholesome states. What's interesting about it is almost all of them are social in nature, meaning that they're motivations we have that are usually exist in relationship to other people. And so these are unwholesome states where we can feel, I think many of these as you hear them, how they are painful for the person who has them. And they are inflict pain or suffering or problems for the people who these are inflicted on, these are applied to. So here's a list of unwholesome states of mind or unwholesome motivations. So covetousness, coveting the things of other people, ill will, having ill will or hatred towards others, anger, having anger is often directed towards others, resentment is often directed towards others, contempt towards others, insolence, envy is often related to others, avariciousness, So again, it's usually wanting the things of other people, maybe. Deceit. Usually we do that in relation in social situations. You can deceive yourself, but fraud, even more so in relationship to other people. Rivalry. Conceit. Conceit is often formed in relationship to others. We're better than others, we're worse than others. We want something from others, and so the conceit wants status, wants something. So without other people around, maybe there wouldn't be much reason for conceit. Arrogance, same thing. Arrogance is often done in relationship to others. And vanity. So maybe vanity is also that way. All these things could be addressed to oneself, perhaps. One could maybe have ill will towards oneself, anger, resentment, even contempt, and could be some deceit towards oneself, and self-deceit. So in rivalry, some people have inner wars between different sides of who they are. So they can be within us. But I want to highlight how much these are social emotions. And so this idea that the unwholesome if we want to contribute to a better society, a better world, if we want to contribute to a world where we don't want to harm others, how useful it is to settle and resolve these unwholesome states in ourselves. As we do that, we don't experience the self-harm that all of these create. And I think it's really fantastic, amazing, that it's also a natural thing that we can resolve, settle, undo these forces in our life. And simultaneously, it benefits ourselves, and I don't know if exactly simultaneously, it benefits others, or benefits others, and maybe not in the moment, but it will, because we're not going to go around with these acting on these unhealthy kind of behaviors. So it brings motivation for us, hopefully, to look at our unwholesome states, to look at the unskillful things we have, greed, hatred, and delusion, and all its different forms. And in doing so, not doing it unskillfully, not doing it in unwholesome ways, to look at our unwholesome behavior and thoughts and motivations in ways that, does more of the same, has ill will in it, that just, adds suffering upon suffering. The Dharma approach is to see it as natural and in a certain way impersonal, to see it as if, maybe if you'd like, you're a child of the Buddha, you're a child of nature, of the world, and the world's not judging you, nature's not judging you. You're accepted. You belong here, and so But please, in this deep kind of sense of acceptance and not non-criticalness of oneself, be realistic and honest about shortcomings and unwholesomeness that we have, and in a certain kind of way, be inspired by that. Wow! If I see this in me, now it's possible to work towards freedom without knowing it there and seeing it clearly. Where's the freedom as well? And this is a call to a loving, a peaceful, and very clear recognition of your foibles, your shortcomings, your unwholesome tendencies, what you do that is not healthy, and try to see it, be with it, relate to it in healthy ways, in skillful ways, in wholesome ways, and inspired by the wholesome. And that'll be the topic for next week. And we can't really separate these two so much. We'll go back and forth a little bit. But so next week we'll look at the wholesome. And what I have in mind is to do so more with the translating kusala, the Pali word for this, by the alternative translation, which is skillful. So we'll look more at skillfulness next week. So thank you so much, and I look forward to next week.